and welcome to Beyond the Norm. I'm Norm Lavalette, and we are here talking about all things comedy, improv, and the business thereof. So, jumping in with our podcast, a lot of times we talk about the business side of it, what's making money, what I love, and what I'm intellectually curious about. So, we'll reverse the order, and I'll go with intellectually curious. Did you guys see it all? I've been fascinated by this thing. Apparently, in Dubai, they're testing out like hover drone motorcycles.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they look like essentially the flying cycles in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like they have that the drone technology,
the quad blades,
yeah. And they fly, but you sit on it and whatever. Yeah. But they have the motorcycle helmets, stuff like that. I'm like, holy shit! If that ever becomes a thing, that is going to be my first like wildly eccentric man purchase.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Have you seen that?
Yeah, I've seen it. I didn't know how far in the they've gone, but it makes sense that with drones becoming more prevalent, like that technology is there.
Yeah. The thing that I was reading was that they're testing it and to maybe deploy in like 2020 or something like that. Who the hell knows? But oh man, that's the world we've been waiting for.
Well, so they have the jetpacks of the water.
Yeah, the aqua.
Yeah,
but you're tethered. This is your going.
And you don't really, that's more of a amusement ride, right? Yeah. You fly, you wobble around a little bit.
Yeah.
But no, this is the future. This is
transportation.
How do I get on my hover motorcycle and use it and go somewhere and fly above the traffic on 93?
What's the, did you see how high they go? Or, because I mean, riding a motorcycle is dangerous. I feel like they're just we're just going to make it more dangerous.
Oh, horribly dangerous. Yeah. Right? Yeah. The liability has to be outrageous. But no, I think they said something they go, anywhere up to 12 feet above the ground or something like that.
Yeah.
It looks ridiculously dangerous, and I don't know how it could ever work, but I don't know, that comes later. But if that to me, there solves your traffic. If you could hover cycle above the 405 or 93, this is the hover lane.
Yep.
And the hover lane is just above everything. It's like, now that's the world that I want to live in before I die.
I mean, there wouldn't even need to be a lane, because there's no restriction to where you're
right, but well,
I
but they're
I don't know, because you could just go like diagonally. There's
A to B.
Yeah.
I think though, Ari, that you want to designate some sort of flow of traffic,
sure,
so that you just don't have people willy nilly hover cycling.
Yeah.
Okay.
With no rhyme or reason.
Yeah.
Because you have to think that none of us are going to know what we're really doing on that day.
Sure. Yeah.
So I don't know, but that's my intellectually.
Yeah, let's get a hover bike.
Oh man, I am on that. And then in terms of things that I love, I love taking the train to New York.
Hmm.
Right, there's a lot of different ways to get to New York.
Yeah, train.
I guess we've discovered that here
on
the podcast, right? Like, well, there's a lot of different ways to get to. What a stupid comment. God, that's a dumb comment.
In 2020, you can hover bike there.
And I will. I will hover bike the shit out of that trip to New York. But I love taking the train, plane. But I find that the train to New York, if you can do it, that's the way to go, man.
Yeah.
It's, the crazies aren't there, on the bus.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some odd people.
Yeah.
Especially, and I've been taking, because my schedule has been a little nuts, I've been taking the 2:40 a.m. Sunday morning Amtrak train back from New York to Boston, because I've been trying to get back for some kids' sports stuff. That's an exciting time to be wandering through down to Penn Station. And the last time I took the train, there was an older guy sitting in front of me, and everybody's like passed out and sleeping, and there's families, all that. And there was an older gentleman sitting in the seat in front of me. And the entire trip, he was just ripping farts the entire time, just ripping them. I'm like, oh my, That is unbelievable.
Yeah.
The volume of it. So that's what you get. So I don't know if that's really the ad that I was looking for.
Hey, you don't get that on a hover bike, though, because people fart and you're blowing them away.
Blowing it away. I mean, if you think about it, they're using fart technology to float you.
That's true. That's true.
In many ways. So that's not really the point that I was trying to make on the Amtrak, because that seems like that would be the horrible way to travel.
Yeah.
But I love traveling on that because it gets me right to where I want to go, but it buys me that time to do some work.
Yeah, it's South Station to Penn Station, right?
Yeah,
it's and then there. You don't have, because I feel like when you fly, it takes just as long to drive or to train because you got to get to the airport, then you're outside of the city.
And then you're outside the city and you got to get an Uber, a taxi, take the subway. It's all, I guess. So, but as much as I've been traveling down to New York, I've really been enjoying it. So, there you go, Amtrak. I think I gave you a plug.
Amtrak. People fart and we're still going to take it.
But it's not enough to deter me going down. And then, of course, in terms of business or what's making money, there's New York. We've got New York up and going and launched, and that has been very exciting.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to be part of the company, and that's kind of like a thing that's happening, but we're so busy doing our thing that you just kind of hear through secondhand of like, oh, people are happy and things are going great and that's cool. Mm. But I have no concept of like what is going on or what the show's like or anything.
Yeah,
like
you know, it is. It's on my end of it. It's crazy to be part of something that you know has sprung to life and within all the complications that these things have.
Yeah,
and this is a testament to the fact that you have a hope, you know, that you have a really good company as opposed to you're just trying to keep all the shit together personally.
Yeah.
Is that Boston is doing so well and the people here are doing such an amazing job and there is not, you know, it's almost, that's a good sign when somebody's like, yeah, I heard it's going well. It hasn't impacted me in the least.
No.
Right. Like that's what you want. And that tells you that you then really have people here in Boston that are doing an amazing job because you wouldn't be able to pursue that next big thing if you don't have really good people taking care of the first thing.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, I feel like it's impacted positively in tangential ways. Like the understudy Zach was in town and he was like, oh, he jumps in and he's jumped in before, but I think it's because like he's a friend of somebody's and like I think he's Second City trained, right?
Or he came from Second City. He was working. I know he did some time on the Second City boats.
Yeah, so he's got, obviously it's like, oh, you've got the skills, jump right in. But now it's just a little different because like, oh, he's in the group, so it's like I am in stage, I understudy over in New York. Like, of course, jump in. It's almost like there's less trepidation or questions, and he just like fills right in.
Well,
that's great.
That's the hope, right? Yeah. The hope is that and what we're trying to do is, as much as possible, we're trying to build and grow one company. Even though these are separate venues, the dream, I don't know if you can get there, is exactly that, which is like, all right, hey Joey, you're in New York next week. Awesome.
Yeah.
Make sure you jump into the shows, you know, jump into the midnight show, jump into the set, you know, that's it. You want people going back and forth artistically.
Yeah.
And you want people to say like, oh, now I do have a reason to go or a show to do. And same thing, Boston coming back. Well, what I find interesting is, you know, look, and we're still launching, right?
Yeah.
We did our friends and family open. We have our press, our big press and media open at the end of the month.
Oh, okay, got it.
So that's coming. And the liquor license is almost there. So they tell me. They tell me that it's supposed to be approved on the 19th. We will see.
Yeah.
We will see. But regardless, we know that it's coming within weeks. At this point, which is good. But what I find very interesting is even in what is still, I consider, all still kind of soft preview type openings, you're already starting to see people come down to Improv Asylum New York simply because they saw awesome shows in Boston and they really like it. We've had at least a handful of people, probably, you know, 5 or 6 people come down, and when asked, and these are, you know, these haven't been huge houses. We were sold out for the open.
Yeah, okay.
But even in that show and some other houses, we've had people come down and we ask like, oh, how did you hear about us? And we're like, well, we really like you guys in Boston, and we saw you were in New York, and we're like, oh no, let's go see them there. Like, yeah, that's yeah. that's the plan, and it's nice to actually see like what you have in your head. Say, well, the idea would be if you like the show in Boston and you find yourself in New York, you might want to go. Yeah. Or if you like the show in New York and you find yourself in Boston, it gives you something, you know, to decide to go do, because I think that's always the case, right? When you travel to another city and you don't know what to do.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
You're like, I don't know. Like for instance, I kind of always go, well, I shouldn't say always, but oftentimes I go check out Second City, Toronto.
Yeah.
Because I always pretty much go to Second City in Chicago.
Yeah.
And then I go to Toronto, I'm like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
I'm like, I guess I'll go see Second City again, right? You know, yeah, I mean, yeah. there is that what you're looking for. So yeah. So we're already seeing some of that, and that's pretty cool.
That's cool.
I was, you know, I've been putting listings up for Brian, and while I was looking for that stuff yesterday, I found someone posted an article about Improv Asylum New York, just plugging it to anyone who was reading it.
Oh, that's
just
great.
Saying, like, these guys have been in Boston for 20 years. They do it every day, and now they're opening in New York. So, and it was a link to get tickets. So, yeah, people know about it.
There's no magic to it, man. It's getting there.
Yeah,
opening the doors, turning on the lights, and doing shows. Yeah. And hopefully you've got enough bandwidth, capital, whatever, to hang on. And if you do, I don't know. You know, that's the only way I've ever done it. And I'm sure there's better and more practical ways to do it. I just don't know how to do it. So that's but it's been really neat to kind of see that, and the response. I was Ari and I were speaking before you came in, and because you were stuck in traffic, and you wouldn't have been if you were on your hover cycle.
There it all comes full circle. Man,
the hover cycle is going to be amazing. Can't even wait. And what I was saying is, like, look, it's a good show. The actors have done a great job.
Yeah,
it's a main stage show. It's, if you saw that show, you'd be like, that's, this is what we do, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They've done a great job. Three of those actors were previously on the main stage here in Boston.
Yeah.
One was had several runs in the NXT. They know the work, right?
Oh, yeah.
Looks and feels, that's what I directed. That's what I wanted to do. It's a very good show.
Yeah.
What's really interesting is, from an audience standpoint, it's blowing people's minds.
Yeah.
Because they're like, what is this?
Yeah.
Oh my, what? You can do something different. So it's not a backhanded compliment. It's a very good show. You would recognize it, or you'd be like, yeah, it's a good show. And
yeah.
But for people, for so much of the audience in New York who have come down, they're like, well, oh my God, this is incredible. What, you know, and you're like, yeah, because it doesn't exist.
I mean, that's great. Now, are you getting that because of the audience? Because it seems like this style in the model tends to be for the general populace. You know what I mean? It tends to be like, you know, people coming in, as opposed to, I think some of the comedy clubs can be very insular and like comics go to that club and industry people go to that club, but it's not really like spot where everyone goes.
You're getting both, right?
Okay,
you're getting both. So certainly the whole premise of Improv Asylum in terms of who we're looking to develop as an audience is a general comedy audience, and we're getting them.
That's good.
We're getting a whole bunch of people though that are curious, and they want to come down. They want to see, well, what's going on in the old UCB space.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting some haters.
Yeah.
I mean, literally the first night we ever turned our lights on. I'm talking like, not even previews. Like literally, it's an open rehearsal.
Yeah.
An open rehearsal where the actors go out on stage and say, hey, we're literally for the first time ever just trying stuff. First night. Later on that night, some people were sitting there scribbling, taking notes in the audience, and they wrote this horrible review.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
Right? What that, like, we let you into a rehearsal, essentially.
Yeah.
And you wrote a review.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, what are you doing? Right?
Yeah.
So you have some of that. But even though we give more attention to that always and forever,
yeah.
If I had to honestly say, we're getting much more of a, hey, great, glad you're here. Can't wait to see what you're doing.
That's good.
But it's hard to think about that, because when you see one idiot go write a terrible review, you're like, yeah, you mean the material we're testing and trying?
Yeah.
You know? And then, like, you know, racial insensitivity. you mean that piece being done by the woman from the Middle East about being a Middle Eastern woman?
Yeah.
You mean that piece?
Yeah.
Or the song being sung by the black man, the African-American man, about what it's like being an African-American growing up in Maine?
I'd just like to say that those sirens have nothing to do with anything we're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know.
That was terrible.
No, that's actually the staff here. Sirens go off anytime I start speaking anything like racial. Like, put the sirens on so it doesn't go off the hook.
Yeah.
Send the sirens off. Norm's getting off the track. But like, you know, it's like, so what am I supposed to... an African-American man can't sing about what it feels like to be a black man from Maine,
yeah.
You know, like, you know, it's like, but there's no context written, right? So you're like, what are you doing? And then I realize, and then I remember, I'm like, oh right, if you were taking notes at another person's improv show to go and just critique it, that's not how you make it in comedy.
Oh,
that has no bearing, and you actually would have no, like, you're kind of a nobody if you're doing that.
I mean, I feel like if you're taking notes. Unless it's like you're the director of the show and you're like jotting down notes so you can give notes later. It's like if you're in the audience taking notes, then you're inherently not paying attention to what you're not living in the moment. So you're missing stuff. So then it's like, yeah, of course the show, because you're not paying attention.
And unless you're a reviewer, you know, this was said to me, right? And again, I want to go back and say, like, it's been great.
Yeah.
The majority of the people, like people that are doing a ton of work at these other theaters, at UCB, at Pitt.
Yeah.
It's been really fun because they've come in and obviously they're very curious to be like, what's going on here?
Yeah. Oh,
and it's been very fun to watch them be like, oh, this is something really different. This is a show. Mm-hmm. This is, I'm like, yeah, that's all. Just another way to do it. So it would be unfair for me to focus too much on the negativity because it's mostly been positive, but that's what negativity does, right?
Yeah.
It makes you focus on it, so that's why you kind of have to disengage from it. But a really good point was made to me, actually by, and this might segue into the 20 years stuff like that, by a gentleman, Brian Freights. Yeah,
yeah.
He was an original main stage actor here. And we were just talking about it. I was like, oh, it's so frustrating. We open the doors for rehearsal and somebody freaking, you know, savages you, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, can you imagine if this was real theater? If this was legit theater and not, you know, what is so often just such an unprofessional business, where can you imagine if you worked at the ART as an actor?
Yeah.
You would never, as an actor at another theater, go to, let's say, the Lyric Theater,
mm-hmm.
sit in the show, take notes, and then post a critical review.
Your career would be over.
Of those actors mm-hmm. in that theater. You would never do it. Right? Like, and yet you see this kind of stuff happen. And then you remember. It's definitely not from anybody who sanctions it, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, if an Improv Asylum performer, if I got wind that an improv, if you, Joey, on the main stage was going over to Improv Boston, sitting in the audience, taking notes, and then posting a critical review of it online, you'd be sitting with me in the conference room very quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because almost the inverse good version of that just happened.
I heard about that.
Yeah, so we have the main stage show, so there was kind of a shakeup with leadership at IB,
mm-hmm.
And with that being kind of, a bigger online community, there's a lot of stuff, so we're like, whoa, what's going on over here? Because we're, you know,
sure.
Some people come from IB or they have friends. And then that night, it just so happened that it was our pianist Steve Sorrow's birthday, and he knows a lot of those people from the IB main stage. They all came over, and it was, they were just an audience, and they were just enjoying it. And then we had Corey O'Rourke, who's from here, jump in, crushed it, and it was just like this thing of like, oh, we're just doing it.
And that's how it almost always is.
Yeah.
But as we always say, right, good news isn't a story. Right?
Yeah,
right,
very true,
right,
yeah.
You know, woman has successful week at office and goes home to happy family.
Yeah.
Isn't a post,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So it is. I and that's how it is. And look, that's been more or less the experience in New York too.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Which is really cool. I mean, I always tell the story back when Will Luera was the artistic director for a long time
mm-hmm.
at Improv Boston. Fantastic guy, right?
Yeah.
And whenever there's this competingness, it always comes from the lowest ranks. It's, it's usually like the students and the newer students. And like, I'm this, I'm that.
Yeah.
And it used to always make me laugh, right? Because you'd hear, and look, it goes both ways, right? It's not one to the other. It's not IB says students do and IA students don't. No, it goes both ways, right? And it would always crack me up because you'd hear, it would bubble up at different times. Yeah. And this would be going on. And like, Will and I are having dinner together.
Yeah, yeah.
Talking about the next show, about him, you know, directing the next show at IA, or he assisted directed with me on a main stage show. I'm like, yeah, that's not how it works, everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, come on, calm down. So, so it has been fun. It's, you know, it's been really fun in New York because that theater has been such an important part of the comedy community. You know, anybody related to UCB. For so long, you know, an iconic space that has a ton of memories. It's been fun to watch people come down and visually see what we've done with it.
Oh, okay.
And that's been really neat because, you know, we've totally changed it in terms of its aesthetic feel and look. And it's been really fun to have people go like, damn, this is cool. This is different. We put in a bar. Yeah. Totally. So that's been kind of fun to see because it has, it did mean a ton to those people, as it should, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's an iconic space. So that's been kind of fun to see that. And it's mostly been positive.
I have a question because I have a theory where this came from, but I want to get confirmed. So when it was, I don't know when this happened. I think it was when you guys were just opening the doors, but somebody went in and ripped on the vestibule thing outside. They ripped off.
No, the awning.
The awning.
UCB, oh, the awning.
The old UCB. Yes. Cut it out with like a blade.
Yes.
So, but rather than like us post like you assholes, it was like kind of like a celebratory like. You rascals, you got it. You should have just asked for it. Like, where did that come from? That take on it that's been...
Well, my take on it, that came from me.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I'm not going to be disingenuous. Well, it came from me. And and look, you can look at something like that, and on one level, you can say, well, that's a shitty thing to do. Then somebody just cut up that awning. Maybe we were going to repurpose that awning, right? Yeah. And stuff like that. Like, you know, hey, here's the deal. Everybody... Good for them. That logo meant something. That meant something to somebody. My only thing was that I talked to my, you know, our marketing and stuff is like, no, let's point it out. You know, like, hey, look, we're here. This is what's being done.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with it. And I said, look, I'm not. Why be mad at anybody? Like, great, good for you. That's a, you know, look. It's a freaking awning. Everybody calm down. Yeah. I'm not going to get all mad over anything like that. I don't really give a shit. And my only thing was, we all do comedy. Can we all just relax and have fun with it and just say like, hey, next time, all you had to do was ask. I would have given it to you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's okay. It's all right. But on the other hand, I did want to acknowledge it because, you know, very realistically, well, what happens if somebody spray paints somebody else's logo on the window? You know what I mean? I also want to point out that like, hey, we do know that it went on, you know, it's okay, but it's not a big deal. Yeah. Good for you. Everybody calm down, right? We're all doing the same thing. Stupid shit in stinky basements.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We got to stop being so precious with it.
Stupid shit in stinky basements.
Have there been any of the UCB performers or crew from that space, have they come down and seen a show yet that you know of?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely been UCB performers out there, but at what level, I don't really know. Yeah. I mean, UCB operates in a very different way, right? So, I mean, there's hundreds of people that are UCB performers.
But, like, has anyone said anything to you or to anyone comparing, aside from just how it looks, you see the old space to the new space?
Yeah, I think everybody who's come down from the old spaces impressed with how it feels. And I won't say they necessarily, some like it more, I'm sure some pine for what it was, you know. But I think the sense that I've gotten from everybody is this, oh, this can be done differently. And, you know, because we even have some people who work in the front of the house at Improv Asylum that also work at the front of the house at UCB.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't, I just, I, you know, great.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and I think the bigger thing is you're getting a lot of this, like, things can be done differently. And that's all I want to show. Like, hey, everybody, you should be looking to do this differently. You should be looking to do this your own way. Like, you know, and we all become blind to it. We come, if we do something for so long, you become blind to it, right? It's like, if you're a manager at a venue, right? Yeah. If you're a manager, you work in front of the house, like you both work in front of the house, so I think you would get this, right? Yeah. If you're there every night, you become blind to a lot of things.
Oh,
it's,
absolutely.
It's not even that you don't care or that you're lazy or anything like that. You just do. If I haven't been there for 3 weeks, I can walk down there and go, that, this, that, why is that there, what's there, pick this up, do that.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh my God. I'm like, no, it's not that you're fully ignoring everything. It's just you become blind to it, right? Yeah. It's part of it. Yeah. So there is that. So when you go in and you see this place, those people were, you know, that theater was the same way by and large for 15 years. So all of a sudden for people to come down, like, yeah, why? You know, to me, the biggest physical difference is the bar.
The bar.
Okay. We put in a full bar.
Yep.
Back over by, if you were ever down in that UCB theater, back where the tech booth was, where they used to have like weird curtained area where they kept boxes. Right. And the big thing, people come down, that's like your visual thing. People are like, yeah, why was never a bar put here before? I'm like, yeah, because they didn't value it. They didn't want to, anything. But like, it visually shows you can do it differently. Don't believe anybody.
Yeah.
Don't believe them. Don't believe me. Don't believe anybody. Like, there is no one way to do it. And that's the thing that I've kind of gotten more than anything else from people.
Sure. Yeah.
So this one versus like, you know, versus Ireland or versus other ventures in the past, why does this one feel better? Is it that location? Is it that just the foot traffic? Like, what's different about this one?
This one is different because it's the same.
That's same as IA?
The same everything, right?
Okay, gotcha.
And so when you do these kind of businesses, if you get any kind of success and any kind of longevity to them, you start to figure out what your best practices are and what your parameters are for making it work or giving it its best chance for success, right? Doesn't matter what your business is, okay? Yeah. And so anytime that something hasn't worked in a major way, mm-hmm. like if you look at Ireland, if you look at being out for a time in Los Angeles, even the first time we were in New York, because we were in New York. We were in New York like, you know, 15 years ago, something like
that.
It's because we strayed from we know what works.
Mm-hmm.
What I know works for me at Improv Asylum, I'm not the only one to do it, but how I do it is I got to control everything top to bottom, soup to nuts. It's the only way I know how to do it, right? Because then through all, you get these things, then you can get them going. And
what do you mean everything? Like, what are
the
all those
venue,
things?
The bar, the ticketing, the show, the stage, the actors?
Gotcha.
7 days a week, 24 hours a day.
Yep.
If I have that, I feel like I have a chance to make it work.
Gotcha.
Right? Invariably, the ones that didn't work, we didn't have that. Right? Ireland's a great example. Right? So we had an opportunity to go over there to an existing theater. Hey, if you were going down your checklist of metrics, it didn't meet any of the metrics that you would say, you know, you need to have it succeed our way.
Gotcha.
I wanted it to succeed, but I didn't control the theater. I didn't control the marketing. I didn't control the ticketing. I didn't control the bar. It wasn't my place 24 hours, 7 days a week. It was none of those things.
Gotcha.
So I failed. Every time it failed, it's been that way, right? In LA, same thing. We were performing at other people's theaters. In New York and Times Square, back in, I think, I want to say 2004-ish, we were performing in the Laugh Factory. It was in Times Square. It had taken over like this giant old, it must have been an old porn strip emporium. And they had all kinds of crazy different rooms, but the Laugh Factory was there as well. It's actually fantastic in terms of having all that space. And so we took over a space within the Laugh Factory.
Oh, okay.
And even there, by the end of it, it was going pretty well. Matter of fact, in some nights we were outdrawing the main room.
Wow.
But again, I didn't control the whole thing. So therefore, what ended up happening was you literally had the door guys trying to steer people coming to our show into the stand-up show.
And that's not... Now you're infighting in the same organization.
And you don't control it, right? And so you can't set every last thing of how you want it to work. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference. And so a place, you know, a place like Improv Time New York, it's the exact same thing here as Boston. I control every aspect of it.
Yeah.
That's it. I don't have to ask permission, compete. And so it'll work or it won't, but at least it'll be under what I know has worked very well for us in the past, which exactly. should give it a chance to succeed.
Yeah. When did you make that realization after, you know what I mean? Because it seems like, okay, there's a couple things where it's like now the lesson is learned. And now I'm assuming if you were to open up another place, it's like, it's got to follow all that checklist. At what point were you like, no, I gotta go back to this model in a way?
Well, you hope the lesson's learned, you know, but there's no guarantee because what happens is, and I think a lot of this now is because I'm older and I've done it longer.
Yeah.
You know, the longer you do things and the more successful you are, the more opportunities come your way.
Gotcha. Right?
Opportunities, once your business or your career or whatever finds some measure of success, the opportunities start coming more and more and more. And when that first starts happening,
yeah,
well, that's all brand new. You're like, well, that's an opportunity. I should pursue that. That's an opportunity. I should pursue that. That's an opportunity. I should pursue that. Not unlike when you're starting out in your performance career, right? But at some point, you start realizing that most of these opportunities are not opportunities. They're just time and money sucks.
Yeah.
Money. Money.
Yeah. Time is money. Money is energy.
Money.
Yeah.
Money. That's what the hover cycles run on.
it runs on pure money.
Let's trademark that. That's really good.
Sure.
But you learn that.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, where I'm at now in my career, I only want to do things that I kind of know. Oh, I should say only things, because that would totally disavow all the crazy stuff I want to do. But when it comes to Improv Asylum,
yeah,
right, it has to now really fit in the parameters of what I want to do, or you've got to pay me a ton of money to do it.
Yeah,
right. I mean that's what it is. It's just, you know, it's trial and error, and then yet who the hell knows?
Yeah,
you know, somebody says I got a great opportunity for you. I don't know, maybe.
Will I make money?
But by and large now, it would. No, I have to control it.
Yeah,
for Improv Asylum, because I know how it works, and I also know what happens when you don't.
Yeah.
The landlord, the partner, the venue. It doesn't. None of it will happen fast enough for the partner or the venue owner. It never does,
mm-hmm.
right? Unless you want to dump a ton of money trying to get it started, and I don't have that kind of money.
Yeah.
And so invariably, it doesn't happen fast enough. The venue owner starts to get antsy and wondering why there's only 30 people in there on a Saturday night when you over at that other venue you're doing, you know, 4 sold out shows at 200.
Yeah.
And then eventually someone's like, well, I can, and I get it and I don't begrudge them, well, I can put in a bar mitzvah tonight and that knocks you out because I can make, as a venue owner, $3,000.
Yeah.
I get it because I do it on the other end.
Yeah.
And eventually you're like, now you're flying around. And then the next hot thing is inflatable sumo wrestling fights. And so they want to start booking that in there once a month. And it always goes the same way.
Gotcha.
Those are all real examples.
I know.
Every one of them.
This is pulled from somewhere real.
Absolutely. Inflatable sumo wrestling. That was hot for a second.
Trying to think of
the question. So when you renovated Improv Asylum, you found the bowling balls, the bowling pins, and all the mm-hmm. the relics from the past. Did you find anything like that in the New York space?
Yeah, we found some prop stuff. We found some props left over. I think a prop machine gun. What was really kind of neat was all the old posters, you know, that were there. All because mm-hmm. you know it operates differently, so there's all kinds of different old show posters, and to see a couple of them like. Somebody's in the Doghouse. That was a two-woman show by Leah Gottschalk and Marty Johnson.
Oh,
so that was kind of neat to see that.
Really
I think there was another one, Two Girls for $5.
Yeah.
That was a two-woman show by Kathleen Carr and David Dupree.
Yeah.
So it was neat to see those kind of things.
Yeah.
And then, so there was some of that, but there was no like major things. Mm-hmm. We saved a few things that I liked. The one thing that, you know, supposedly in one of the pillars... pillars next to the stage, somebody's ashes are in there. right? Somebody must have meant a ton in the place. They died and they wanted to have their bag of ashes thrown down this like pipe that's around the pillar. And, you know, I kind of say this is where you need to be careful, everybody, when you get sentimental about where your ashes go.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure that person was like, this place meant so much to me, and they passed, and like, and I just want my ashes at the, you know, this theater.
Yeah.
And so on. I will live there forever. And like, you know, the story is like, someone's like, and it's right there on that pillar. I'm like, uh-huh. Oh, that's really great. All right, let's rip everything out. Let's go. We gotta, and, you know, yeah. It's thrown out with everything else. Yeah, I'm like, yeah. I'm like, that's a biohazard health code violation. Get it out of here.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
So when you decide that your ashes, bones, skull, wherever is going to live here forever,
yeah,
most likely it's not going to.
Gotcha.
You may want to be cognizant of that. But it, you know, by and large, it's you know, it's felt just like doing Improv Asylum originally in Boston, because it's followed all the same things. It's followed all, you know, we're doing what we know how to do. We'll see if there's an audience for it.
Yeah.
But we're doing what we know how to do, and what we know how to do pretty well.
Yeah, that's cool.
So yeah, but other than that, it's been great. I've loved it. I love the cast has been phenomenal. How professional, how hard they work. They recognize that they have a, you know, pretty cool opportunity to. They're the only six that are ever going to be the first six.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
And it's cool because, like, I feel like when you start working at the theater, the main stage in your mind is always that, whatever your first six was, and to have it be like, well, most of that first six was my first six that
Vicky
I saw.
Yeah, Vicky was on my first six.
Yeah, it's like, oh, this is really cool to see that happen. I have a question. So now we're at 20 years, which is a milestone.
Sure.
Or they say 5 years is kind of the, you know, make or break point for a lot of...
Yeah, that's what they always write about.
Yeah, that's what they always say. At what point when you were starting Improv Asylum here as a young man 20 years ago, at what point were you like, oh, this thing's going to go, and then do you still think about that, or do you just think about like, well, now it's its own thing. Like, it's to 20, it seems like 25 isn't going to be like a struggle. Now that's kind of like a given. At what point was there kind of a oh, this is, I've created it, and now it's just going?
Well, there's the point where you think that and you have no reason to think that
because
you're an idiot and you just think that it's going to be a hit. And then there's the real point, right?
Yes.
You know, so the idiot point was, you know, as soon as we signed the lease, you know, like, we're going to be a huge hit.
Yeah.
That's the idiot point, though. There's no reason for me to feel that way. But
somebody said that it's like, if you're in a band and you don't think you're the best band in the world, what are you doing? I don't know if that was like the Beatles or something like that, but like, I'm like, if you're doing it and you're putting all this money, you got to think that it's going to work, right?
Yeah. I mean, and to a degree, I'm still that way, to a very large degree till this day. I'm like, well, it comes off sometimes as arrogance or hubris, and I understand it, but it's not meant to come off that way. I was just like, well, yeah. This is gonna be great. We're gonna be a huge hit.
Yeah.
I'm really funny. We're gonna assemble funny people. We're gonna do this. This is gonna be great.
Yeah.
I don't. Why else would you think? I don't know. Like, you have to think that way, and you have to more than think. You gotta kind of believe it. So, yet, it was also very naive of me, right?
Yeah.
With that said, when did I really think that I'm like, oh, this is something? Like, this is like, you know, after going through all the trials and tribulations of getting it open and blah, I would say we opened in May. We opened in May of 98.
Yeah.
By the fall.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. Holy crap.
By the fall. That fast.
I thought it was going to be like, oh, after 10 years, I was like, oh, we've got the boat. You're like, no.
No, by the fall.
Months.
Yeah, it really was.
Right, yeah.
You know, by the fall of 98, the weekend shows were packed.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, now, did I know that it was going to grow to this level, and you know that we would have all these shows and employees, and that I would travel around the world, you know, teaching and discussing philosophies of improvisation? No, I did not.
Yeah.
But by the fall of 98, I'm like, this place is packed. This is a hit.
Yeah.
So it was that fast. It was that fast. Now, the odd thing though is, just because it's a hit doesn't mean it's going to stay a hit. And doesn't mean it's going to keep working.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something very different.
Gotcha.
Because while it was a hit, the real work became sustaining it and growing it, and not letting it just be a flavor of the month or the year, right?
Yeah.
And that's why when you say like, well, at what point do I get like, yeah, this just works and it's good to go? Never.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
Like when you say like, well, we're at 20, so obviously we're gonna get 25. That is never obvious to me.
Okay. Gotcha.
That is never obvious to me for so many potential reasons.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I know how hard it is. I know how hard it is to do a show, one show in a night. I know how hard it is to do multiple shows in a week, multiple weeks in a month, and putting that together for a year. It's very, very difficult.
Yeah.
And I don't take it for granted. Like I don't take for granted our audiences,
mm-hmm.
right? I think even as performers and sometimes people who work down here, one of the things that you get lulled into is just thinking it's easy to get audiences.
We walk out the door and they're there.
Yeah, and they love you. And you've got sold out shows at 5, 7:30, 10 at midnight.
Yeah.
I'm astounded every single weekend because I understand how hard it is to get.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I don't take that for granted. And 20 doesn't get you shit. 20 gets you 20. That's it. That's all 20 gets you. It doesn't get you 21, and it certainly doesn't get you 25.
Yeah.
What gets you 21? It's 21.
Yeah.
So that's how I approach it.
Gotcha.
So it's pretty tricky stuff. You know what? You know, maybe in another podcast we can talk about some other stuff in the 20 years.
Sure.
But I think that's kind of a good place to end it.
Sure.
Which is nothing gets you the next thing.
Yeah, 20 years. Well, maybe 21. Here we go.
Maybe. Hey, man. I don't know. Who the hell knows? Place could flood and be filled with feces. It could burn down. The city could just decide to shift Hanover Street, you know, 7 feet to the right, and they take it by eminent domain.
Yeah.
The landlord decides that it's more lucrative to let CVS rent it to store paper goods than it is to rent to a theater company. You don't know. You don't know.
Yeah.
So, you know, just don't assume anything. Don't assume, don't assume you're going to keep being successful.
Yeah.
Uplifting moments. I guess this is Beyond the Norm.